The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening. Welcome to Sports Talk 1240. This is December 6, 2015. Sitting across from me, co-hosting, Unco Asanya, as always, with me. Well, most of the time, most of the shows. But you know what we're talking about here. Exactly. Well, we got a lot to talk about today. I mean, we got the Jets and Giants game today, which was back and forth. You know, Giants were up. Jets came back. You know, there's a lot of talk we got to talk about. We have our guest here from Newsday, Tom Rocks. He's a Giants writer. He's going to talk about the game with us. And Tom, it's Raymond. How are you doing today?
Hey, man. What's going on?
I'm doing well. You know, there's a lot of stuff we got to talk about in this game because, you know, the first quarter, it was pretty much 0-0. Second quarter started off with a bang with Dwayne Harris scoring a touchdown. From that point on, Giants had 20 points. You know, the Jets were still in it, of course. But, you know, was more this loss more on the Giants' side or the Jets just doing plays at the right time?
Well, I think it was another case of the Giants missing out on opportunities. You look at all the chances they had. They got the fumble recovery down there. They get the ball at the 10-yard line. And they have to settle for a field goal after they can't run it in. Eli throws a pass that's a little behind Hakeem Nicks. If he leads him properly, it's probably a touchdown for him. You go to Odell in the second half there. He's got a play in the back of the end zone that he has his hands on. He drops that. It gets knocked out of his hands. That's at the end of the first half, I should say. And then of course the big opportunity, they have this humongous 17-play, 11.5-minute drive that just churns and churns and churns and gets them to 4th and 2 at the 4. And Tom Coughlin, rather than kick a field goal and make it a 2-touchdown game, decides to put the dagger in the Jets there and try to end the game and take a 17-point lead. And Eli Manning throws the interception. So
you think that you think that was pretty much a momentum shift for the game? I mean, that pick, I mean, yeah, as a coach.
That was the hinge of the whole game right there, because if the Giants score, they go up by, if the Giants do score the touchdown, they go up by 17, and the Jets have to score three times. If the Giants even settle for a field goal, they're up by 2 touchdowns, and the Jets have to score 2 touchdowns. Now, maybe they would have. Who knows the way the Jets defense is playing, but the Jets were able to settle for a field goal and still tie the score there. But that was the turning point of the game, maybe even of the season for the Giants. You know, that's something that there's no way you can't come away from that drive and that position without any points and expect to win and expect to be taken seriously in this league.
Tom, it's Unqua. Good evening to you. First and foremost, just looking at the way Eli Manning's really played all year long, he's been pretty inefficient unless Odell Beckham Jr. is involved. And this time, he got a long touchdown play to him again. But why is it that the Giants seem to struggle scoring points when they do have a top-half quarterback and one of the best receivers in the league? What happened to everybody else?
Well, I'd argue that they're not really very efficient when it comes to Eli and Odell either. And, you know, their completion percentage is very low. It's the lowest among all the top targeted receivers in the league. They were six receptions today on 11 targets, so a little over 50%. Last week, nine catches on 18 targets, 50%. So it's not like it's hitting all the time, and we saw that a couple of times. We saw the drop in the end zone. We saw the little dunk play there at the end where the ball went through Odell's hands. So, you know, while Odell is certainly putting up very respectable numbers and putting on a show for us all the time, he had the 72-yard touchdown catch and run today. That's certainly not not even a sure thing, that connection. But then, you know, to get to your point about everybody else, yeah. I don't know what's going on with Reuben Randle. He's got to show up here in one of these games one of these days. Two catches today for 22 yards. Obviously, he was the target on the the key interception there in the fourth quarter with 8 minutes or so left. So it looked like he just stopped running the route. He kind of gave up on it, and it was intercepted. So I'm really not sure what's going on there. They used a lot more Miles White today than they did Dwayne Harris and at wide receiver. Sometimes they rotate that. Akeem Nicks was out there a little bit. They won a couple of series without Randall on the field. He's been ineffective. They got to take him off. They need somebody to win battles. If defenses are going to pay all that attention to Odell Beckham Jr., somebody else needs to win battles. And it can't be Will Tye. He's a good player. He's a young player. He's a developing player. He's exciting, but he can't be the 1A to Odell Beckham Jr. in this offense. Not when they came into the season thinking that they were going to be able to score almost 30 points a game with Odell and Cruz and Randall and the rest of the receiving and the passing unit that they thought they had.
Well, Eli's always been a bit of a gunslinger throughout his career. Why is he misfiring so much? Do you think it's a matter just of his reads? Is it talent? Is it more of a combination of the two?
Yeah, I think it's a miscommunication with Randall. Every pass to him just doesn't seem to be on the money, whether it's the route running or the pass. You even look back at last week against Washington, they had the key interception in the back of the end zone on the pass to Randall that was picked off. And then a couple plays before that, there was an incompletion in the end zone to Randall it looked like he kind of alligator armed it a little bit. And really didn't make much of an effort to go get the ball, and it was broken up. So, yeah, I think the Giants need more from Randall. That's basically what it comes down to. And, the things with Odell, that's going to be execution, and it's not going to be perfect. And, they have one hot game, and that completion percentage that we talked about goes up a little bit. But, the Randall needs to produce, and he's not.
How much blame should it be on Todd Coughlin for Eli Manning? Because, the past few games in the season, especially the first game of the season, they had a 10-point lead on the Cowboys. They blew that. They had a 10-point lead on the Falcons, in the fourth quarter. They blew that as well. The Patriots, they blew that as well. I mean, is it really just, been an ongoing cycle of them blowing games when they're up by 10?
Yeah, it's the fourth time in the fourth quarter this year that they've done that. It's pretty crazy. You look at Tom Coughlin's decisions, and I know he's being criticized for these decisions, but it comes down to execution in my mind. If the Giants make the plays against Dallas at the end of the game and score a touchdown there, they win. If Odell Beckham Jr. holds on to the touchdown against the Patriots, or if Landon Collins secures that interception, they win. If they throw a touchdown on the critical fourth and two decision to go for it, they probably win. He's in a little bit of a, darned if you do, darned if you don't situation because of the team. And he, if he's too aggressive, then it's gonna backfire. And if he's too conservative, that's gonna backfire too. And it's because they're not a very good team.
So, from this game today, what have we learned from this game, from both teams, the Jets and Giants? Are they heading to different directions now after the result of this game?
They're heading in different directions. I think the Giants still have a better chance of making the playoffs, to be honest, because of the division. If Dallas beats Washington tomorrow night, you're looking at a three-way tie with the Cowboys one game out in a miserable division where nobody seems to be able to get out of their own way, and some teams look hot, or all of a sudden the Eagles beat the Patriots, and you kind of raise an eyebrow at that. But who knows what's going to happen in this division? And even if Washington wins tomorrow night, and the Giants find themselves one game back, I don't think it's over for them. There's still a quarter of the season left. They're still right in the thick of this disaster of a division, and they probably have a much better chance than the Jets of actually getting into the playoffs, which is strange. I mean, they could finish with a record three games worse than the Jets and having lost the head-to-head battle with them, and the Jets might be watching the Giants have a home playoff game in January.
Talk about incongruity. We're talking to Tom Rocks, the Newsday beat reporter for the Giants. Looking at this from the outside, then, Does that mean the Giants can afford to just sort of shake this one off, or is this one that's going to stick with them for a bit?
Well, I think it sticks with them because it's part of a whole. It's part of a larger picture of this continuing to happen to them, and it's going to be in their heads until they stop it. You know, we talked to Colin Jenkins after the game, and he said, you know, you either fix it or you go home. And that's the way it is in the NFL. That something needs to change. Something about their attitude, their preparation, their play calling. At the end of these games, they're not finishing these games. You know, even after that long drive and they didn't score any points and the Jets came down and kicked the field goal, the Giants had a chance to milk some clock, time off the clock, and they couldn't. They went 3 and out. 3 and out. And that situation is inexcusable, and it's not the first time it's happened to them this year, and you know, judging by that, it probably won't be the last.
You know, you mentioned play calling moments ago. Ben McAdoo, his second year in New York, and Eli's had really subpar results under him. Now, Kevin Gilbride definitely took his fair share of criticism in the past, but do you really think it's a matter of the offensive coordinator just not being the right fit for Eli over these past couple of years?
No, I think the offense fits Eli okay. You know, listen, there's curious calls all over the place, and you know, one of them that stands out is the third and goal from the one today with the chance to score, and the Giants basically said, "We're gonna do what we do worst against what you do better than anybody else in the league," which is run the ball into the teeth of the top run defense in the NFL and see what happens. And what happened was Andre Williams got bounced back for a loss of 1 yard. They seemed, you know, intent on trying to run the ball against the Jets today, and that just didn't seem to be a wise strategy. You know, they had a couple of runs there. They had Andre Williams did have a 13-yarder, but, you know, you take a couple of those away, and they barely had 50 rushing yards against the Jets, and they kept pounding the ball and trying to run it. Those kind of things just leave you with coming from these games scratching your head, wondering why all of these things are not working, you know, when they should be.
Well, I look at the Giants' remaining schedule here. You know, they're on the road against the Dolphins. That's next week. Then you got home against the undefeated Panthers, potentially, depending on the Panthers, they win the next game. Then you got on the road against the Vikings, and then you got home against the Eagles. Now, two of those games right there, Panthers and Vikings, they're going to be tough games regardless. You know, these are good teams right now. And even though the Vikings lost to the Seahawks, they're going to redeem themselves against the Cardinals on Thursday night. Dolphins look like a winnable game, and the Eagles look, well, even though they won against the Patriots, look like possibly they have a winnable game. Is there any scenario in this schedule you see the Giants finishing 7-9 or possibly even 8-8?
Well, I mean, I don't think any game is you can chalk up as a win right now with the way the Giants are playing. They've lost 3 in a row. They've shown no aptitude to be able to close out games when they have a lead. They can't come from behind, as we saw in Washington last week. So there's, you know, I don't think you can bank on any win. You know, can they win 4 of them? Sure, that's possible. Can they lose all 4? That's entirely possible too. These Giants, I don't think that there's a strong enough character there that you can say, this is what we're going to get. This is what we're going to see when they take the field next time. I have no idea. I don't think they know what kind of effort or what kind of performance they're going to put out there when they step on the field, and that's part of the problem.
You think this stings the loss for the Giants, the fact that it was against the Jets, more?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, they see these guys in the charity events and throughout this, you know, going out in the city and doing other things, and they're going to have to, you know, listen to them brag about it. And you know, for a couple of years now, they're going to have that hanging over their heads. But to be quite honest, like I said, I think the Giants have a better chance of making the playoffs than the Jets. So that would certainly erase some of that pain.
I guess I'll ask you one more question before I let you go. How much blame, is it a time really for a change or and a head coach for Tom Coughlin, because, you know, it's been like year after year with these games where they can't finish, and it seems like they haven't made the playoffs since 2011 when they won the Super Bowl. So is it really time for a change now if they don't end up making the playoffs?
It might be. It might be. You know, I don't think it's his fault. I don't think that what he's doing is wrong. I think he's making the calls and they're not working out. I don't necessarily always think that they're the wrong calls. But the team is, you know, they're not a good team, and they're lucky enough to be in a not good division, and so they're still alive in it. They have a chance, if you go back to making those plays and making cashing in on those decisions, you know, they could be a 10-win team right around now. And instead, they're 2 games below 500, but there's still a possibility of being tied for first place when the dust is settled after tomorrow night. So it's, you know, it's way too early to tell what's going to happen. I will tell you this: a year ago, when they lost to the Jaguars, John Mara said he was ready to fire everybody. And he walked through the locker room tonight, and he kind of had that same look in his face, as he did in Jacksonville last year. They are not happy right now. Whether or not they can salvage the season, or whether or not they can salvage his tenure with this team, will be determined in the next 4 weeks by how this team plays and how it performs. And it may not be judged solely by wins and losses, but by effort. And by other things, but I think it's, we're getting close to the end here of John Mara's patience with losing.
All right, thank you, Tom, for being on the show. We'll be in contact. You know, hopefully the Giants make it to the playoffs. We'll be in contact for that. Well, thank you for being on the show,
Tom. Thanks.
Okay, fellas.
All right. Well, you know, it's a lot of interesting stuff about the Giants, but you know, it's been like this for what, 4 years already, about these Giants learning not to finish games. And it's almost like this year, you know, New York sports in general has been like that, if you think about it. They're not capable of finishing stuff when they should be finishing. You know, we go, Yankees had opportunity to win the division. They didn't finish it. The Mets had chances to finish off the Royals in games. They didn't finish it. And now you look at the Knicks learning how to finish games now. And now the Jets, you know, even with Bowles trying to finish games, trying to figure that out as well. But it's been an ongoing thing for the Giants. And if I were, the owner, of course, and he's just like what he said, like when they lost the Jaguars last year, gonna fire everybody. So what are they gonna do now? If they don't win the division, you might as well just fire everybody. You had this opportunity right here.
And I don't disagree, and to be quite honest with you, I think when it comes to the way the Giants are composed, it's pretty much the same thing year in and year out. You know, the real problem areas haven't really been addressed for this team. For instance, they needed a 1A outside of Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah.
They had James Jones, and somehow he finds his way back to the Packers. Yeah. That's an oversight that's kind of inexcusable at this point. And then you also look at how thin the defense is as well. Yes, losing Prince Amukamara, it hurts you a lot because he's your top cornerback. But seriously, there's no depth in the linebackers, what the Giants are historically known for. And to be quite honest with you, you kind of wonder – how much is really left in the tank? And I don't think much is.
Yeah, and Jason Pierre-Paul with, you know, clubbing people into his hand, trying to get to the quarterback. That's why I see most of the game today. And that's all you have really in the pass rush. That's why they're arguably last in passing if you look at the rankings right now. And, you know, it's been always the same question, the linebacker. They haven't drafted a linebacker since what it was, since like Lawrence Taylor or something like that. And, that's too long. And then you look at the offensive line of the Giants. Like, they're banged up, and you know, there is two rookie lines, but they had this quick pass from Manning, and it's not working, like you said, because they don't have Beckham Jr. and nobody else, and that's a problem. Look, Manning's good, and I'll give one credit about this. He's good at making tight ends look good, but he needs – that's the only thing he's good at, but he needs other weapons around him to at least have Beckham Jr. have pressure off of him. That way he can work around it.
And I think it's important. I think it's important for Eli that we place some of the blame on him too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been erratic the past couple of years anyway. And my personal opinion is that the offensive coordinator is not really the best fit for Eli. I mean, they went through, tried to change his footwork and pretty much deviate from the things that made Eli a two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback.
He's borderline elite quarterback. I always said that.
He's definitely below it now. Yeah. Look at the last couple of games. It's been kind of ridiculous.
Well, you know, one New York team won today, and that's the Jets. And, you know, this is a good win for the Jets. And as a Jet fan, I got to say that was a good win to see. And it was a lot of pressure. But we look at the stats here. Fitzpatrick was 36 of 50, threw 390 yards, and he had two touchdowns. And a quarterback rating 107. Now, we know Fitzpatrick can't throw down the field. We know his arm strength is not as strong as anybody else in the league. But he makes plays. He's got Decker and Marshall. Now he got a lot of power right now. He's making plays off the backfield. That's giving us pressure off of him. And you look at this Jets win, and you say to yourself, do they secure themselves a wild card spot if they win out? Do you see that situation happening?
I mean, look, as the playoff picture stands right now, they're sixth, which means they're in. Looking at the rest of their schedule, they host the Titans. That should be a win.
Hopefully. Mario doesn't run on them, but we'll see.
But seriously, that should be a win. The Titans are deplorable. Then you're on the road against the Cowboys. No Romo.
Yeah, that should be a win.
That should be a win.
On the road on a Saturday night, but that should be a win.
Home against New England is a grudge match.
It is, but we've seen today Brady has no weapons. And unless it happens to that week where he still doesn't have any weapons, they have a chance probably.
Either way, I'm more willing to call that a loss.
Yeah.
Speaking of grudge matches, you finish this season on the road in Buffalo. That one, I see them pulling out a win in Buffalo before I see them knocking off the Patriots at home, which is weird because you expect a home field advantage everywhere you go. But when it comes to facing Rex Ryan, it's personal. They got embarrassed at home on Thursday night.
Yeah.
They're going to talk about that all day long. But when you talk about Tom Brady, I mean, hate him, love him, ambivalent, whatever it is, Tom Brady is a Hall of Fame quarterback.
And he finds a way.
And he finds ways to get it done. He threw three touchdowns today with who?
Scott Chandler. And pretty much Scott Chandler and James White, I believe. But that's all he has. I mean, no offensive line. I mean, Edelman is still a little
bit injured. And he still threw three touchdowns.
Amendola is still, like, you know, he's still injured. Edelman is out. And you got to get credit now. It looks like Edelman was actually a better receiver than we thought. But now it looks, and then no Gronkowski, which makes it even worse. So he's working with what he got, but he's Brady. But I can see this Jets team finishing 9-7 or 10-6 at most. I don't know about 11-5. That is a dream right there.
No, that's not even a dream. That's just not happening.
I mean, with the schedule right now, the Titans, I could maybe point that as a win.
The Titans are a win. Sorry, Tennessee. The Titans are a win.
They could take Mariota to win. He can still go off, but I'm saying, it's a win.
The Titans is a win. Cowboys are a win.
It's a win. I mean, that defense is not that good, and they got no quarterback. You should be able to have turnovers on the quarterback. And you got, of course, New England. That's a tough game. And the Bills might be tough, but, you know, the Bills have been winning games, and they have been losing games. So that last game, it could be potentially be you get into the playoffs with that win. Or maybe before leading up to that, which is a dream scenario, like I said before, maybe they re-secure a wild card spot. And then that game could be pretty much their bye week.
Now, here's what's interesting to me. I'm looking at Pittsburgh's schedule because Pittsburgh is 6-5. They play tonight.
Yeah.
Then you got Buffalo at 6-6, Houston at 6-6. Oakland even at 5-7.
Yeah.
Miami's a joke.
Yeah, Miami's down.
Now, looking at the Steelers' schedule, it's brutal. And for the record, the Steelers are up 6-3 against the Colts. They're just underway here on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah.
Thank you. No, NBC, maybe you owe me money. But the rest of the schedule, they go to Cincinnati to face the Bengals. Then they host the Broncos. But then they get two softies to end the season with the Ravens and the Browns.
Well, those are divisional games, though.
They're all but one are divisional games.
They would do anything to spoil their fun not getting to the playoffs if one of those teams aren't going to miss the playoffs regardless.
And this is why... The Jets have to at least go 2-2.
They have to go 2-2. They have to win against the Titans. They got to go on the road against the Cowboys. We're not expecting them to, you know, maybe beat the Patriots the way they are right now. But if they find a way, they'll find a way. And then the Bills, I think this should be a winnable game for them. I think they want to have revenge on the road and beat them. But like I said, we could go all the way to that Bill game and say to themselves that either they got to win it to get in or maybe – by that time, Bills start losing games. Maybe they'll have a bye, and then they'll just get in regardless. We could see that scenario, too.
And then even looking at the team right above them with the same exact record, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
They're the number 5 seed right now, and they knocked off the Raiders, which helps the Jets because, well, it might not help the Jets, depending on how well the Raiders do down the stretch, seeing as the Raiders have the head-to-head. But then they host the Chargers, who are awful.
Yeah, they're awful.
They go to Baltimore. Joe Flacco's out. They're done. Then they host the Browns before facing the Raiders one more time. So the Jets, in essence, need to be Chiefs fans in the worst way, which is ironic because they're tied with the exact same record for a wild card spot.
You can see both of these teams getting the fifth and sixth wild card spots.
I mean, that's the way it is right now. There's no reason why they can't. It can't hold that.
Remember, the Chiefs were 1-5. They lost Jamal Charles, and now they're on a 6-game winning streak. Now they're just winning games now.
Listen, Andy Reid.
Yeah,
get what Andy Reid does.
Yeah, you gotta get
and now I bet Philly wishes they had him back.
They wish they had him back with the team we had before Chip Kelly made all
and
those
Chip
moves.
Chip Kelly, we trust my behind.
Well, they beat the Patriots somehow, and they almost blew it too.
Doesn't
but they
matter.
Won the game.
And Chip, we trust my behind.
But, you know, looking at from this Jets game overall, you know, Bowles, he made some decisions in the game where you question yourself, and then same thing with Coughlin. But it's almost like they came from the same, you know, tree and Parcells. Is it a Parcells thing that he can't finish games? Is it a trait?
I mean, it is cold, but I'm saying it.
Is it really something like that?
I don't think
you can't say that because
I don't think
Belichick
coaching trees work like that. I don't think coaching trees work like that. It'd be funny if they did, trust me. But honestly, and Tom mentioned this when we spoke to him near the top of the hour. This just seems like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
There's not really much you can do about it. You can push all the right buttons as a head coach, but if you don't have the talent to make things work,
it doesn't work.
And here's the thing about the way sports is covered, including what we do here on Sports Talk 1240. One of the most overrated aspects of sports is coaching. Not because coaches don't matter, not because coaches can't have a positive impact, but because the game is won or lost on the field.
It is.
If you don't have the players to compete, you have no shot. That's why looking at everything from college basketball to even high school basketball, that's why John Calipari can pay attention to the game in no way whatsoever, which is unfair because he's actually a pretty good schematic coach. But let's say Tom Calipari tosses the keys to his 24-year-old grad assistant who's worked under him for a year and a half. That grad assistant has a better shot than a tenured mid-major head coach who's gone through the ranks and has a pretty solid team simply because the guys on the floor are just better.
They are.
And in the NFL, even more so. No matter how good you are as a head coach, if you don't have the pieces to make it work, it's not going to go well.
Yeah, look at Chip Kelly. Look at all these other teams that are doing bad right now. It's a talent that you got to have. And, you know, now we're switching topics, of course, to the NBA season. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff we got to talk about. The Warriors still undefeated. Cash are slipping away right now. Are we going to have a chance to see if the Warriors are going to lose before Christmas or maybe they'll face Christmas? We'll talk with NBA Associate Editor Joel Cardes from Bleacher Report, talking about the NBA, about the Knicks, Kristaps Porzingis, and some other stuff around the East and West. So far, 1240 here.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240 and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240 and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines. Also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
No way! No way!
Back here on Sports Talk 1240, that was a clip from ESPN on the rap song, Rich Past Porzingis, that they made actually a few months ago before we got drafted, but they made the song, and, you know, interesting song, and It was pretty catchy. You got that, like he said on ESPN, you had that European swag. But we got NBA Associate Editor here, Joel Cardes from Bleacher Report. Joel, it's Raymond. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard that song right now, but that was pretty much the theme song, Chris Paz Porzingis. I don't know if you heard it before, but it's a pretty catchy song.
It's been out there for a little bit now and starting to gain traction, and certainly he's living up to the song, that's for sure.
Yeah, he is. You know, sticking with Porzingis before we get into the whole Knicks and NBA, you know, right now he's averaging 14 points and 9 rebounds, and he's averaging almost 2 blocks. His player efficiency rating is now 19.84. It'll probably go up as the games go by, but is this a surprise to everybody that right now he might be even a candidate for Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, and you could even say he's probably front runner for Rookie of the Year right now. A couple of weeks ago, it would have been Karl Anthony Towns, who had a really hot start to the season. He's still put up some double-doubles along the way, but Towns, I think, has been a victim of the scouting reports catching up to him just a little bit. People are figuring out how to adjust to him, and so he's having to make those counter adjustments. On the other hand, Porzingis came in a little bit slower than Towns, but week by week, he has outpaced the scouting reports, and he has continued to get better. And he's had noticeable improvements to his game, it seems like, every 7 to 10 days, like clockwork. So what he's doing right now, it's so important to the Knicks because they really don't have that consistent second scorer, and he's filling that void and showing that he can be more than that. He's their leading rebounder. He's their leading shot blocker. Those two things are incredibly important, and he's still playing under 30 minutes per game. So as that continues to go up and he continues to get more comfortable, I think it's going to be a two-man race between him and Karl Anthony Towns, and Porzingis is going to have the advantage of playing in the New York market versus Minnesota.
So, you know, Knicks are under 500. You know, they continue to be competitive throughout, you know, the first month of November. Now, right now, you know, they're 10-11. They're going to have a game tomorrow against the Mavericks, and they go on that West Coast trip. Has the league noticed now what the Knicks are doing right now, considering that they're being competitive with the players that they have?
Yeah, the Knicks are one of those teams that you don't want to take for granted. They can beat just about anybody on any given night. That was not the case last year, obviously, when they were too often the victims of just about anybody they played. But New York certainly still has their flaws. They can't score the basketball efficiently. They still rely on way too many mid-range jumpers. Their defense has been great. They've been a top-10 defense, and that's been a major improvement from last year. But they're not shooting the three ball very well, just 33%. That's just outside of the bottom 10. The good news is they hold their opponents to the worst three-point percentage in the league at just 30%. So they're trying to figure out who they are right now, and it's going to be as a defense-first club. But they have had nights where they just simply cannot get the ball in the basket, and that's especially difficult if nobody can support Carmelo Anthony and Porzingis. Those guys have been fairly consistent. But Aaron Aflalo is just coming back.
Yeah.
He hasn't really had his sea legs under them, and they really haven't had that consistent other guy or group of guys step up. It's just somebody different every couple of nights.
Do you see any scenario in which the Knicks might possibly trade for a point guard?
I think it is possible, but you really have to look at what they have. and they're probably not going to be able to get a top-flight guy. I know some people have said, well, maybe they should take a flyer on Ty Lawson from the Houston Rockets, yeah, and things aren't really working out there. But,
yeah,
you know, Ty is damaged goods at this point, and you're not going to get him just for Jose Calderon, just to make the numbers match up. So are they going to get rid of somebody like Derek Williams on top of that? Would the Rockets even want that at this point? That remains to be seen. You know, this is not a win-now year for the Knicks. It's a developmental year, even though it means it's another ticking clock sort of thing for Carmelo Anthony. And Robin Lopez and Aaron Fowler are not exactly young guys either. But it still is a developmental year for Porzingis, for Jaren Grant especially. And I guess my advice to the Knicks would be, yes, you could try to roll the dice and give up some assets, but really you should just be giving more of those minutes to Grant and Galloway. And you really have to see what you have with those guys and let them cut their teeth, for lack of a better word. They just really have to continue to grind through it this year. And if you get to this off season and you miss the playoffs and you're disappointed about the way those guys played, then revisit it when you don't have to go into desperation mode to try to make a move. If you're a low playoff seed, that's great, but that's probably the ceiling for this team anyway. So this is not a push the chips into the table type of thing.
Joel Atunqua, glad you're joining us tonight. Thanks for a moment. I want to take a look at some of the bench pieces that have really sort of made their way into this Knicks season, particularly Lance Thomas. I've seen a lot more of him than I thought. What do you think has been fueling that?
Lance Thomas has been a really fun story for the Knicks because this is a guy who, you know, was bouncing around the league last year, wasn't even sure whether he was going to remain with the Knicks. And all of a sudden, it seems like the light bulb has gone on for him. He was kind of just a hustle player last year, and that was it. And now he's continuing to make those glue guy type of moves. It's a big rebound. It's a big pass. It's knocking down a mid-range shot when he has to. You know, certainly he's not ever going to be a star. You could make the case that he probably won't be a starter during his career either. But as a glue guy off your bench who can come in and play some decent defense, Lance Thomas has been kind of that jack-of-all-trades, master of none. The next step for him is really going to be develop that identity as a player. Which of those solid things that he does, which can he kind of take to that next level and then, you know, get bigger minutes on winning teams? But you got to like what you've seen out of him so far.
As far as Langston Galloway is concerned, I'm a George Washington guy myself, so to see someone from the conference kind of do something is kind of nice to see. But he came in undrafted, but it seems like he's also been making big strides, and he's their best three-point shooter. But how did the Knicks end up helping getting him open looks?
What really is impressive with Galloway is last year you could have made the case that, all right, this is a guy who came in out of the D-League. He's playing on a terrible team. Somebody's got to make those shots. He was a nice story. Yeah, he got a little contract extension with the Knicks, but you know what? Those guys come and go. He really had a lot of pressure, even though he was under the radar, to be able to come back and prove that last year was not a fluke. And he's been able to play quality minutes. You know, again, Galloway is not one of those flashy guys by any means, but you will always have a career in the NBA if you can knock down three-point shots and play pretty decent defense. And Galloway has done both of those things. The nice thing with him is that he's able to give them some minutes at both guard spots. That's nice for a bench player for sure. It's always a little bit of a blessing and then a curse when you're trying to figure out whether that guy can be in your starting lineup. Because oftentimes guys like Galloway, who are maybe a little bit undersized, they get exposed if you have to put them in the starting lineup long-term and play lots of minutes at just one position. They're always better if you can give them a little bit of the one and the two. And so I think he's finding a good role. And there again, these are good rotation players, and that's what the Knicks really lacked last year because they were asking anybody who could fit in the rotation to get starters' minutes. So it's about finding these guys solid bench roles that they really can own and then continuing to tinker with the top flight players and make sure that New York can get enough firepower scoring the ball.
Staying in the backcourt, Jaren Grant, I loved that pick the minute that the Knicks were able to make it. His development, it's been rocky, but, you know, he's a rookie. Do you expect to see him in the starting lineup sooner rather than later, or does Kyle Ledone just end up doing it for the Knicks right now?
I think so much of it has to do with where the Knicks are by about the All-Star break. If they're still in the playoff hunt, and I think Calderon continues to hold down that job just because it is a good learning experience for Grant to see an NBA journeyman veteran like Calderon, who's been a very smart player with the basketball, in his previous stops. He hasn't been very good with the Knicks, but there's a lot of experience there. And so Grant is basically the understudy. And if they're still in the playoff hunt by the All-Star break, that means it's working well enough. And if anything, you'll see Grant start to play more and more minutes off the bench and Calder on a little bit less, even as he holds down that starting spot. If they're a little bit out of the playoff race or it looks like it's slipping away, that's going to be the time where Derek Fisher really has to start giving the young guys big-time minutes, and you'll probably see the roles flip-flop. You'll see Grant playing about 30 minutes a game and Calderon under 20, and maybe even less than that if they're going to give point guard minutes to Galloway, or maybe they bring another guy up from the D-League to take a look at him. So it's very situational, but like you said, the Grant pick was a really nice one for the Knicks because they needed a point guard. Grant was a little bit under the radar coming out of Notre Dame, but he had been a very solid player, and he's a big point guard. And he's a big point guard who can handle the ball and get into the lane. And that's a luxury in today's NBA when you can see just enough over the defense and break them down to kick the ball out. And that's something that Grant really has thrived at.
Talking with Joe Cardes from Bleacher Report, associate editor from NBA on Sports Talk 1240 AM. You know, staying on the East now, you know, a lot has changed in 1 month. You know, first we had the Cavs in first place. Now they dropped down after a loss to the Heat. Now they're currently in first place to the Heat while Cleveland's slipping to second. How do you think this is going to shape up? Because, you know, LeBron had a rest day. There's so much mileage on his body playing all these minutes. Is there a scenario in which the Cleveland might just be, you know, trying to stay healthy, be in the playoffs, you know, possibly maybe the Heat, even the first seed, or maybe even the Bulls or Pacers that are getting hot right now as well?
I think it's very much a possibility. A lot of it depends on when they get Kyrie Irving back and then how healthy is he. With LeBron sitting the other night against Miami, it was an ugly game. Kevin Love has played terrible for the last three contests, and Cleveland is 0-3 during that point. But really, with LeBron, this is all part of the plan. They knew they were going to rest him as the season went on. They knew they're going to give him fourth quarters off when they can spare it or at least cut down on his minutes, because Cleveland really, they don't care where they are in the standings as long as they're in the top four and have a home court advantage in the opening round. I think that's about it for them. The bigger goal is just having that fully stocked roster, a great mix of veteran players, of younger players. They are explosive on both sides of the court. They need to have that roster together when they hit the playoffs rather than the one last year that completely ran out of gas and then had bad luck in the injury department. And they still got to the NBA Finals and still almost won that thing. So, yeah, it's going to be the plan with them. If Kyrie Irving comes back, they're going to be able and plays very well. I mean, the Kyrie Irving that we remember is the explosive guy who can also knock down long-range shots. If he can come back, you'll see a lot of nights where it's just him and Love, and Cleveland will continue to roll, and they will rest LeBron even more. If Kyrie comes back and is just a shooter but doesn't have that extra gear yet this year as he rehabs, you might see LeBron have to play a few more minutes just so that they make sure they're in that top three, top four seed. But it's probably going to be about the same story.
Seeing that we're talking about Cleveland, I just had to ask this so I could get it on air, on tape for the record. Cleveland trading the number one pick, which would have been Andrew Wiggins, for Kevin Love. I think it's still a mistake. Do you?
I'm a Timberwolves fan, so you're asking the right guy. I'm very happy with the way that turned out. Wiggins is showing that he has that next-level superstar potential. There's a kid who's scoring over 20 points per game now. He's becoming a clutch player. He still doesn't fill up the score sheet in a lot of other ways that you would want, or the box score. Not really a guy who's going to rack up assists or rebounds yet. That's a little bit troubling. But he has also shown flashes that he can be a top-flight defender, too. His one-on-one defense is fantastic. He has all of the instincts and all of the athletic tools. He's very smart in his rotations. So a lot of that stuff is just getting reps. And when you knew you were going to lose Kevin Love and he was going to be gone and didn't have a whole lot of leverage in that situation, it really was a win-win for everybody. And that Minnesota got the best possible package they could. And the number one pick in Wiggins, they got to take a look at Anthony Bennett, another number one pick, even though that didn't work out. They got Thad Young, who then they flipped into Kevin Garnett, and Kevin Garnett has become the sensei master for the Timberwolves. And Cleveland, yeah, I mean, would the Cavaliers be better if they had Andrew Wiggins right now instead of Kevin Love? Maybe. You certainly would have Wiggins playing fewer minutes because he'd have a lot to learn on this team. They would be a lot more athletic. And they would still have Tristan Thompson manning the power forward spot. but they also would have zero stretch shooting out of their front court, and that's a big thing that the Cavaliers need to open up the lane for guys like LeBron and Kyrie Irving to get to the cup. And Love, you know, he's having a bounce back year where he's scoring almost 20 points per game. He's getting 10-plus boards. So I think both teams got what they wanted, but in the long run, when you ask me this 5 years from now, yeah, Wiggins is the way to go.
You know, now going on the west side, you have the Golden State Warriors who just won today. Now they're 22-0. You know, they were actually down by Brooklyn by four and late in the third quarter, but they came back and, you know, they won in the fourth quarter. Is there any team capable of beating this team? Because, you know, you look at lineups like, you know, teams with the big lineup, you know, they try to beat them, but it doesn't seem to work. And Draymond Green, he could play, you know, pretty much four and the five, and it's all too well for them. They go small, they go in a shootout with them, it doesn't work because that favors them. And it's almost like, is there any team capable of beating them? Maybe the Spurs, maybe the Thunder, we haven't seen them yet, but is there any other team?
There will be. This Warriors team is not going to go 82-0, even though it feels like it right now.
I mean, it does.
Even though it absolutely feels like they're going to. Their shooting has been unbelievable. They move the ball the right way. They've been a top two defense back since the Mark Jackson era. So, I mean, they get after it on both sides. They're deeper this year. They're smarter this year. Steph Curry playing unbelievable. You can't take any of that stuff away from them. At the same time, though, go back and look at their schedule during this run. In the 22 games, they've played nine teams that have made the playoffs last year. Twice that's been the Brooklyn Nets, who didn't even belong in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Twice that's been the Clippers, who have not played all that well this season. They've had the Houston Rockets once. They've had the Grizzlies twice, who have also been down. So none of those teams scare anybody. And they've beaten the Raptors twice. And honestly, the Raptors are the only team that has really given them a game in those contests and was a playoff team last year and has been playing well so far. Golden State has had, and I'm not taking anything away from them, but when you look at their schedule, they have not had to play anybody, and I forgot the Bulls in there as well, but they've been a little up and down too. They have not had any world beaters that they've had to face off against quite yet. Even if there were teams like the Jazz who missed the playoffs last year, the Pistons, they're a little bit better. They haven't played the Thunder yet. They haven't played San Antonio yet. They haven't played Cleveland yet. That's going to be Christmas Day when the Warriors and the Cavs face off. So it's going to get tougher. And as it gets tougher and as teams get dinged up and as, you know, maybe focus wavers a little bit, they're probably not going to win every single game against the top flight competition. And they're probably going to have a couple of roadkill games out there where somebody, you know, really steps up like Toronto did the other night and takes them to the mat, at least temporarily, and maybe the Warriors don't come back in it, because Golden State almost lost to Toronto. The Raptors had them through that fourth quarter, and Golden State made that run at the end when it counted.
Almost lost to the Nets, too.
Yeah, and Brooklyn played them close today as well. The last thing I'll say about Golden State, you know, they don't play San Antonio, who's been easily the second-best team in the league, and yet still flawed. They don't play San Antonio until January 25th. They don't see the Spurs again until March 19th, so almost 2 months later again. And then they play them twice in the last four games of the season, when both teams will probably be resting a bunch of their players. So they're going to get the Spurs, and it's going to be late, but we may not really settle that debate until we get into the playoffs.
Are the Clippers a threat at all in the West, or are they just a joke? Because, you know, I came into this season, the pieces that they acquired, pretty much Josh Smith, Paul Pierce, Lance Stephenson, I didn't think they fit at all, because I felt like there was too many personalities and the roles were going to be different. And, you know, as much as Doc Rivers is great and everything, it doesn't seem like this team is not fitting well. And with Chris Paul injured and even him playing at a high level, and I said it before that if he was a selfish player, this team would probably be elevated to the finals. But it's almost as if they just rely on Blake Griffin. I mean, is the Clippers team really a threat at all?
They can be. You know, they had to take a bunch of risks on these red flag guys like Josh Smith and Lance Stephenson, because they didn't have any cap space and they didn't have any assets to trade. So they had to go after the damaged goods like this and hope that they could roll the dice, because those guys had seen better days elsewhere. And Doc Rivers was really betting on himself to be able to pull this all together. It is definitely a work in progress. The bench is modestly better than it was last year when it was an absolute train wreck, but there's an actual ceiling on it this time. last year the bench players, a lot of them didn't even belong in the NBA anymore. Right now it's a bunch of guys who are learning to play with each other. Paul Pierce looks like he might be washed up, but then again, every time we say that, he comes in and knocks down big shots when it counts.
Yeah.
And they've been dinged up too. But I think a lot of it is just the chemistry of this team. If Doc Rivers can keep everybody focused and keep their heads on straight, and so far nobody's gotten in trouble in L.A. or anything like that, you haven't had any reports of infighting, as long as they keep working through that, I mean, honestly, this Clippers team is about as deep as anybody in the NBA right now when you go 1 through 10 on their roster, and they can play very interchangeably. They just haven't figured it out yet, and you do wonder if they ever will. But it's early on in the season, and I think it's too late to panic or be too confident about them until we get to about the All-Star break.
Joe, I think this kind of leads us to a larger question. We've seen over the past few years the trend of head coaches wanting to be in charge of building their own teams and pretty much putting their own destiny in their own hands, being the coach and the GM. Do you think we're going to see more of that? And in your opinion, does it really work?
I don't think we'll see more of it because coaching in the NBA takes so much. Being a general manager takes so much, and there's few guys who can actually wear those hats and do it well. And, yeah, everybody wants to look at Greg Popovich, who really has been the de facto GM, although they get R.C. Buford in there as kind of an equal party. So even that's a little bit of a misnomer. A coach likes to have that power because they want to be able to go out and get their guys. Time and again, they've proven, and Doc Rivers was definitely this way last year, where he made mistake after mistake with that roster, giving up assets and then having to backtrack to try to cover up what he had done. They just don't always understand the cap ramifications the same way it can work, and they don't always think long-term about their roster either. That's where having that balance of power with a general manager who, you know, can really look at that big picture and maybe cool the jets of that coach when he's frustrated with a guy or sees somebody that he thinks he has to have. You know, if you have a good relationship between those two parties, that's the better way to do it. But a lot of times, you know, those guys don't necessarily get along, or it's actually the GM who has more power than the coach, and so he can be the one firing that coach when things don't work. And that's why coaches want that power. And if they've been a winning enough guy like a Doc Rivers or like a Stan Van Gundy, they can demand it as they're coming in. But, I mean, look what happened with Jason Kidd in Brooklyn last year. The rumors were that he wanted to be that guy, and Brooklyn basically laughed him out of the building to Milwaukee. Not everybody can do it, and most people shouldn't.
All right. Well, Joel, I'll ask you one more question before I let you go. This Thunder team, you know, they're being up and down. I still feel like it's been, you know, Westbrook and Durant turn. How good can this Thunder team be? Can they actually be good enough to be in the finals, or is it just more of – the chemistry with the team or the coaching, or is it a combination of all those?
I believed that Oklahoma City, at the beginning of the season at least, my preseason prediction was that the Thunder would wind up with the best record in the West during the regular season. I really thought they were poised for an absolute tear with their guys back healthy. They're deeper than they've ever been. They finally get somebody other than Scott Brooks to coach their offense and really open things up, and Billy Donovan has been doing that. But they seem to have just kind of hit a little bit of a malaise here, where they don't close out games like they should. They let teams back into it. They're not defending at the level that they really should, giving up almost 103 points per game. And you can't blame all of that on Enes Kanter, who might be the worst front court defender in the league, yet he still pops in double-doubles on the other end. So they've got a lot of different pieces. They've got shooters. They've got some defenders. They certainly have their two top-flight superstars and the third wheel in Serge Ibaka, who's always very solid. They have all the pieces. They're kind of like the Clippers in my mind, where if they put it all together, they'll be really scary. But you're kind of just wondering, when are those variables all going to click? And they have fewer ones to put together than the Clippers do, although a new coach can certainly do a lot with that. But, I mean, don't look now. The Thunder, they still have the third-best point differential and victories, and that's usually the metric that I use most often. They're third behind San Antonio and Golden State, beating people by 5.5 points per game. So they've just had kind of a lot of, brain freeze type of games where they've let other teams come back in close. But I think they're on the doorstep of being in that contender conversation.
All right. Well, thank you, Joel. As always, you know, do a good job on the NBA. We'll be in contact.
Thanks.
Hey, I look forward to it. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. Have a good night. All right, so, you know, like you said, there's a lot of stuff with the Thunder, with the Clippers. You know, the Warriors, it just feels like they're going to be 82-0 by the way they're playing. And it's like, is there any game where you say to yourself, oh, the team has a chance to beat them?
Yeah, well,
maybe the Pacers Tuesday night. We'll see.
Well, but I'll tell you what. We'll end up, and guess what? If they endure a 4- or 5-game losing streak, the first thing they're going to say is, well, the Warriors aren't who we thought they were.
I know. It's always like that.
I'm just going to enjoy it now that it's here, but let's hold off on the comparisons.
You think you compare them to the 72-10 team of the
stop,
Bulls?
Stop. Everybody stop. Seriously, can we just enjoy it? And then if it happens, hey, cool. And it's okay to keep tracking it, but it's December.
Well, you know, there's a lot of stuff.
Wake
in
me
NBA.
Up in March.
A lot of stuff in the NBA, as always. You know, the Knicks are still competing games, and the Nets have just been disappointing and awful most of the time.
They're not disappointing. They were going to be bad.
They were going to be bad when they made that trade. I remember when they made that trade, I thought it was going to be a bad trade in the long run. It was not. They weren't going to win a championship in that year regardless, but yeah, it was a bad trade. Now, you know, going to back to NFL before we end the show here, Jets and Giants, do you think these teams are going in different directions as of right now after the results of what happened today? I mean, he said Giants have a chance, but I still believe the Jets, if this win gives them even a better chance now.
To be quite honest with you, he brings up a great point. Say the AFC East is as deplorable, you could be able to chalk the Jets in for a playoff spot. But as it is, you got 3-10-2 teams in the AFC.
Yeah.
And one of those teams resides in their division.
Yeah.
But I think the Jets have a better shot at making the playoffs than the Giants.
I believe, too. I mean, they're facing, the Dolphins. It's a winnable game, but we don't know that. You know where the team is right now. Panthers, you know, they're undefeated. They might even go undefeated by the end of the season, the way their schedule was pulled out. The Vikings are not going to be an easy game. You got Adrian Peterson. You got Bridgewater, even though he had a terrible game against Seattle. But, you know, the Giants, they have a lot of problems right now. And it comes to Tom Coughlin. Should they kept him? Should have whatever? I always said it before. They should have fired him when they had the chance because he's not putting this team in situations where they're finishing games and they're not in the playoffs, and they haven't been in the playoffs since 2011. Now, on the Jets side, you know, you got rookie coach and Todd Bowles. He looks like he's 7-5 right now. Can they finish strong at least, even if they miss the playoffs or not? But we'll find out. I want to thank, of course, Tom Ross, Newsday, Giants beat writer, being on the show. I also want to thank Joel Cardes, NBA associate editor from Bleacher Report. I want to thank Brian Graves, as always, doing a good job on the soundboard. Thank Unko Asanya, sitting across from me. As always, talking about sports and everything. I want to thank all those for listening and wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. This is Sports Talk 1240 and WGBB in Long Island.
See you in 2016.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.